Welcome everybody to our Wednesday evening Bible study here on December the 6th. And we're into chapter 7, which is the chapter of the great flood of Noah. I'm just going to read it through and then into the middle of chapter 8. And then we'll go back and look at the importance of it. Then the Lord said to Noah, "Come into the ark, you and all your household, because I have seen that you are righteous before me in this generation. You shall take with you seven each of every clean animal, a male and his female, two each of animals that are unclean, a male and his female, and seven each of birds of the air, male and female, to keep the species alive on the face of all the earth. But after seven more days, I will cause it to rain on the earth 40 days and 40 nights, and I will destroy from the face of the earth all living things that I have made." And Noah did according to all that the Lord commanded him. Noah was 600 years old when the flood waters were on the earth. So Noah, with his sons, his wife, and his sons' wives, went into the ark because of the waters of the flood. Of clean animals, of animals that are unclean, of birds, and of everything that creeps on the earth, two by two, they went into the ark to Noah, male and female, as God had commanded Noah. And it came to pass after 7 days that the waters of the flood were on the earth. In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, the 17th day of the month, on that day, all the fountains of the great deep were broken up, and the windows of heaven were opened, and the rain was on the earth 40 days and 40 nights. On the very same day, Noah and Noah's sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and Noah's wife, and the three wives of his sons with them, entered the ark. They and every beast after its kind, all cattle after their kind, every creeping thing that creeps on the earth after its kind, and every bird after his kind, every bird of every sort. And they went into the ark to Noah, two by two, of all flesh, in which is the breath of life. So those that entered, male and female of all flesh, went in as God had commanded him, and the Lord shut him in. Now the flood was on the earth 40 days. The waters increased and lifted up the ark, and it rose high above the earth. The waters prevailed and greatly increased on the earth, and the ark moved about on the surface of the waters. And the waters prevailed exceedingly on the earth, and all the high hills under the whole heaven were covered. The waters prevailed 15 cubits upward, and the mountains were covered. And all flesh died that moved on the earth, birds and cattle and beasts, and every creeping thing that creeps on the earth, and every man. All in whose nostrils was the breath of the spirit of life, all that was on the dry land, died. So he destroyed all living things which were on the face of the ground, both man and cattle, creeping thing and bird of the air. They were destroyed from the earth. Only Noah and those who were with him in the ark remained alive. And the waters prevailed on the earth 150 days. Chapter 8. Then God remembered Noah and every living thing and all the animals that were with him in the ark. And God made a wind to pass over the earth, and the waters subsided. The fountains of the deep and the windows of heaven were also stopped, and the rain from heaven was restrained. And the waters receded continually from the earth. At the end of the 150 days, the waters decreased. Then the ark rested in the seventh month, the 17th day of the month, on the mountains of Ararat. And the waters decreased continually until the 10th month. In the 10th month, on the first day of the month, the tops of the mountains were seen. So it came to pass at the end of 40 days that Noah opened the window of the ark which he had made. Then he sent out a raven, which kept going to and fro until the waters had dried up from the earth. He also sent out from himself a dove to see if the waters had receded from the face of the ground. But the dove found no resting place for the sole of her foot, and she returned into the ark to him, for the waters were on the face of the whole earth. So he put out his hand and took her and drew her into the ark to himself, and he waited yet another 7 days, and again he sent the dove out from the ark. Then the dove came to him in the evening, and behold, a freshly plucked olive leaf was in her mouth, and Noah knew that the waters had receded from the earth. So he waited yet another 7 days and sent out the dove, which did not return again to him any more. And it came to pass in the 601st year, in the first month, the first day of the month, that the waters were dried up from the earth, and Noah removed the covering of the ark and looked, and indeed the surface of the ground was dry. And in the second month, on the 27th day of the month, the earth was dry. Then God spoke to Noah, saying, "Go out of the ark, you and your wife and your sons with you, Bring out with you every living thing of all flesh that is with you, birds and cattle, and every creeping thing that creeps on the earth, so that they may abound on the earth and be fruitful and multiply on the earth. So Noah went out, and his sons and his wife and his sons' wives with him. Every animal, every creeping thing, every bird, and whatever creeps on the earth, according to their families, went out of the ark. Well, if you do the math, from the time they went into the ark until they actually came out of the ark was a year and 10 days. A year and 10 days. And how many of you have ever heard of that song, It's All About the Bass?
It's all about
there was a pop song called It's All About the Bass, About the Bass. It was popular like last year sometime.
Can you sing a little bit for
me? No. Anyway, I don't know it that well. I just remember the title. But I would say this is all about the flood, right? What's so controversial about the flood is that the theory of evolution has been so popular and has been in our schools for so long that it has put pressure on preachers and theologians to compromise with the theory of evolution and to say that the flood was local instead of global. They're afraid if they insist that the flood is global that the evolutionists will make fun of them and call them, you know, redneck hillbillies or something. And so they're afraid they'll lose their credibility. You know, people won't believe them when they say that Jesus died for their sins. And so with that kind of pressure, they have compromised. But they don't need to now because there is so much evidence and so much more evidence that continues to come out that proves that the flood was global. We don't have to compromise. We don't have to give in to the evolutionists, you know. And not only is there a tremendous amount of evidence to prove that the flood was global, but there's a lot of evidence to prove that the earth is very, very young. It is not millions of years old. There's a lot of evidence to show that the dinosaurs were on the ark and it became extinct afterward. One of the things that I point out in one of my seminars is here a few years ago, not too many years ago, maybe 15 years ago, there was a lady scientist who was, I think she was one of those people that works on fossils, paleontologist, and she was looking at a dinosaur bone. And for some reason, they'd never done this before, she cut into the bone. I guess they never did it before because they didn't want to disturb it or whatever. She cut into the bone and found soft tissue and found actually hemoglobin cells that carry oxygen. Mm-hmm. And they are so brainwashed about the dinosaurs went extinct 65 million years ago that instead of looking at that and thinking, oh, wow, that really changes everything, they just looked at it and shook their head and say, how'd that last for 65 million years? Yeah. And then they thought it was some kind of weird fluke or something. And so since then, they've at least over 50 times, they've seen the same thing cutting into it. They see the soft tissue, you know. So it's there. The evidence is there. When we look at a global flood, scientifically speaking, what we see is exactly what you would expect to see if the waters were over the entire earth. Over our continent, we see the same sand grains, the same soils over thousands of miles that were laid down over that time by water. When you look at the Grand Canyon, or if you go through, many of you, I'm sure, have gone through where they've had road cuts through mountains and you're driving through there and you look and you see all these layers. Mm-hmm. Well, evolutionists will say those layers were deposited over millions of years. Well, if they were, you wouldn't see distinct layers. And if you cut into that, you can see that the surface of each one of those layers is smooth.
Yeah.
Yet they will tell you that there were millions of years between the layers. Well, why wouldn't there be animal erosion? Why wouldn't there be animal tracks? Why wouldn't there be signs of erosion if it laid there open to the atmosphere for millions of years? But it's not. It's like a pancake. It's just, you know, flat and undisturbed. And if you take a big container of water and you put sand and silt and gravel and all different kinds of things like that, and you mix it up, it'll layer out every time. It'll layer out just what you see in the road cuts. It'll layer out like what you see at the Grand Canyon. And it's very obvious the Grand Canyon was not formed by a little bit of water over a long period of time. It was formed by a lot of water over a short period of time. And remember when Mount St. Helens erupted, May 14th, 1980. Remember that? Mm-hmm. And there was a guy named Harry Truman that would not leave, and he died. Well, it formed, in just a matter of a few weeks, a canyon about 1/40th the size of Grand Canyon. And it did it in just a few weeks. And so we learned a lot from that, there was mudslides and there was all kinds of things that happened. It took out, I forget how many trees. And they learned a lot by watching and seeing the after effects of that. We see fossils of marine organisms 1,000 feet above sea level. You see them at the top of the Grand Canyon, marine animals. And so, you know, how'd they get there? You see layers that are bent. Not sharply, they're just folded and bent like that. Well, how did that happen if they were laid down over millions of years?
I have a question.
Yes, absolutely.
I know that there was enough food on the ark for the animals to eat. Mm-hmm. But what about when they came off? What did they eat?
Well, by then, like say, sorry to say Moses, I do that. Noah waited, you know, until he was sure that it was dry.
Oh, okay.
And there was vegetation growing again. Oh. So, yeah, that's...
Yeah, it said mine says 2 months went by, and at last the earth was dry.
And even, I'm sure there wasn't nearly as much vegetation. It would take a while, but there was just a few animals.
Right.
Left.
Right.
And obviously, and one other point I want to make is the reason they took seven of some of the big clean animals to sacrifice. So as long as they didn't sacrifice six of them, they'd be okay.
My footnotes, although I know you say sometimes they're not right.
That's all right. Go ahead.
Scholars have estimated that there was almost 45,000 animals that could fit into the boat.
Yeah, and you have to remember, too, all they had at that time to go on the boat, in a lot of cases, was just... two of each kind, okay? Two of the dog kind, two of the cat kind, two of the cattle kind. And then since that time, they've all expanded. We have over 1,000 breeds of dogs now, and wolves and coyotes are all from that one kind. So there wasn't hundreds of breeds of dogs on the ark. They've varied ever since. Were you going to say something?
Is that possible, 45,000?
I don't know. I haven't seen the number. There's room for that much.
Okay. Well, that's what's yeah.
Yeah, the ark. Yeah, and I have a note on that. The ark was, according to an 18-inch cubit, it was 450 feet long. So that would be a football field and a half, if you would think of it in that a whole football field and a half long, 75 feet wide, which is a lot wider than a football field, and 45 feet high. There were three stories. Of course, if you've ever been to the Ark Museum, it's supposed to be the actual size, the best they can do. Yeah, it is amazing. And what I like about it is on the third floor, it's all about salvation.
Yeah.
You go, it just talks about, you know.
It's fascinating. It's just hard to believe that
I do have that question.
Yes, yes.
It says, you shall take with you seven each of every clean animal, a male and his female. Mm-hmm. You can't have an odd number if there's a female for every male. That's, does it mean seven?
That's true. There was one. I think what that means is just be sure you've got one of each.
Okay.
You know.
It wouldn't mean in seven.
And then they were gonna sacrifice five of them anyway.
Mine
you know.
Says take with you seven pairs, male and female.
Yeah.
Oh, yours does have the word pairs?
Mine says pairs.
Pairs. Yeah,
mine does. I don't know.
Well, that's totally different. That'd be 14.
So that'd be like seven male.
I haven't seen that before.
Female.
Mine just says seven of each. Either way, however many there was, they were going to sacrifice them and then make sure there were two to repopulate. You know, and then the unclean animals was just
well, they
two.
Have to have seven pairs because wouldn't they have, if they're going to sacrifice, I mean, they have...
Well, not necessarily.
7 days a week.
And then the other thing I read about was some of these animals may have had babies on the ark, too, possibly. But on the other hand, possibly not.
Lord might not allow that to happen.
Yeah, I read that. I hadn't read that before. You know, I don't know one way or the other about that, really. It's possible, I guess. Also want to mention that I have a book at home. I've showed it here before. It's about that thick, and it's got over 300 flood stories from all over the world. Well, the book I have is North America and South America, and they're supposed to come out with a new one, but they estimate over 500 stories of the flood all over the world, which is exactly what you would expect. They come off the ark, then there's the Tower of Babel, God confuses the languages, they all split up and go all over the world. They would all pass down that story about what happened. Now, just like anything else, it's distorted. It's not the same as the Bible story because it was handed down by word of mouth. But it's all the same theme. A man built a boat, family, flood, all the main things about it are the same. It's different names. Sometimes it's a canoe, but it's some kind of a ocean or a sea vessel that a man built, and he and his family were saved from the flood. And it's all over the world. Now, if you just had a local flood, that'd be hard to explain. You know. The local flood theory just doesn't stand up. You know. Just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. The other thing I looked at was coal. Coal seams. Evolutionists try to explain coal by saying that, you know, peat, which is compressed vegetation, they say that that peat over several millions of years, you know, made coal. But that can't be, because if you take peat now and look at what it's doing now, plants grow and roots grow in it. But the fossilized coal that they find is not that way, because when the flood came, it just washed the vegetation out, and a lot of it floated on top. Some would get waterlogged and sink to the bottom. So you'd have some on top, some on bottom. And then over a period of time, it would compress and it made the coal. But it didn't take millions of years. That's the other thing I started to say a while ago. When an animal dies in the forest, what happens to it? Within a month, it's pretty much gone. Scavengers eat the flesh, and then even the bones decay, and it's gone. The only way to make a fossil is to bury it quickly. Rapid burial. That's the only way. Fossils are not made over long periods of time. The body will decay if it takes that long. And so you have to bury it deep, and you have to keep it away so that the scavengers can't get down there to it, no oxygen can get to it. And you bury it, and then over time, minerals settle into the skeleton area, and it makes that hard impression, and that's what, you know, basically...
That's what a fossil is?
That's basically what a fossil is. It's a mineralized body. And that's what, you know, people look up and find. The vast majority of all the fossils, 95% of all the fossils, are sea animals. And you say, well, why couldn't they just swim? Well, when you think about the fountains of the deep coming up, it just lifted up the ocean floor, picked it up, you know, because you've got all these steam jets shooting up, which would cause the ocean floor to come up and come down. So a lot of marine animals were buried. Not all of them, of course. That's why they didn't have to have them on the ark. But a bunch of them were, simply from the mud and silt coming back down and burying them. And the other thing I forgot to mention was fossil graveyards. They find graveyards of animals, thousands of them in some cases, buried in the same place, which is what you would expect if these animals were fleeing the rising waters, you know, and then say something collapsed or a dam burst or something and all this water came down, it would kill them all at the same time. They found many of them in swimming motions, trying to get away. Mm-hmm. And so the animals that were the most mobile were the last ones to be killed. And they're higher up, you know, on the fossil scale layering, which is exactly what you'd expect to see. So the evidence is there. It's how we interpret it. And the evolutionists want to look at it and say, wow, that must have taken millions of years. We look at it and say, makes sense. You know, we have all this water laid down these fossils. sedimentary rock all over the place. Sedimentary rock is simply rock laid down by water, you know. And the only rock that can be dated is igneous rock, which comes from a volcano, and the lava hardens. And we have seen many times where very recent volcanoes had erupted within 100, 200 years ago. I mean, they know when it happened. And then the rock would form. And they would take samples of that rock and send it to the scientific labs to see how old it was. They didn't tell them where they got it. Yeah, they might say 10 million years old, 5 million years old. And it was from a volcano 100 years ago. You know, it's just not very accurate. It's not very accurate. There's just too many problems with it. That's a whole nother.
So I have another question.
Yeah, sure.
So are these scientists evolutionists?
Yeah.
Are they twisting the information to make it be the same as what they want to think in their mind, and they're trying to say God isn't real? Or do they really believe that their scientific findings match what they're saying?
Well, I would say really yes on both points.
Both.
I think that most of them are atheists, and you know, the theory of evolution, if you take it seriously, you can leave God out totally, because they've come up with a theory that totally leaves God out. And then they look at the data, and I don't think they're deliberately lying or deceiving. They're just looking at it from their viewpoint and trying to make it fit their beliefs.
Okay, that's what I was trying to say.
Yeah, that's...
They're making it fit their beliefs.
Right, and they're looking at it from a totally different perspective, and if it doesn't fit their theory, they either just don't want to talk about it or leave it out, or say, well, eventually we'll get the evidence and we can explain it. We can't explain it right now, but eventually we will. And they're just confident in their theory. The problem is they're not being honest in the schools. They're not saying this theory has a lot of problems with it, you know, but maybe one day we'll be able to explain it. They don't explain it that way. They teach it like it's fact. And that's what I don't like about it. I mean, they should teach it right along with the creation theory and let the students decide. But they teach it like it's fact. And that's what really, really bothers me. Because, I mean, kids that were raised in church and they go and they start seeing this and they respect, you know, this professor or this teacher, and they think, wow, he's really great. And he's telling them this. And then they go look at their Bibles and say, well, this doesn't make any sense. I mean, that's what happened to me. When I was at Cheshire, I liked science, and I was reading all this stuff about evolution. I'd read my Bible, and I'd think, this doesn't make sense, you know. Fortunately, the pastor at Cheshire at that time, Pastor Huber, had also been a chemist before he became a pastor, and he sat down with me, and he was able to help me out quite a bit. But the average preacher wouldn't have been able to have helped me like that. But he had a scientific background, and... Mm-hmm. You know, and then one of my best friends, Keith McGuire, has been a biology teacher for years in the Gallup school system, just recently retired, and he's a creationist, and he teaches, you know, he has to teach evolution, that's his job, but he tells the students, this is what I think, and he's allowed to tell them what his opinion is, you know, and so he teaches it with a grain of salt, so to speak. He said, I have to teach you this, but this is what I believe. And we're blessed to have more than him. There's a few other science teachers in the area that feel the same way. But that's unusual. Most of them are diehard evolutionists, and they teach the kids this is the way it is. You know. So, okay, let's pray. Dear Lord, we thank you for this lesson today. There's a lot here. There's so much to learn about this. But the main thing is we just need to know that we can believe your word, that your word is true, and that the evidence is there to show that creation is true and the flood really happened, and we can have faith in that. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, we didn't...